It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Beck.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour two. Was it me, or was that a real quick turnaround? Case, was that a short break? It felt like I had just put the headset down. All right, maybe. It was checking in with Sid. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Sorry we missed you last week.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, that was a crazy week last week. From New Orleans to Vegas, and then you were tied up. So that's all right. We got plenty of time to dig through and catch up on some of the interesting pedigree storylines that crop up on the 3-year olds. It's funny. It's sort of like parallel tracks. There's the consistent reoccurrence of things like the Intermischiefs and the Tappets, and then there's, you know, the pop-ups, and whether it's a young sire and the kind of weekend that Practical Move had last weekend, or some of the horses that are a little bit more under the radar, even the filly last week of Kelsey Danners, Dance Macabre, winning the Here Comes the Bride, and you also had Michael Yates' upsetter in the Devona Dale, the Gervin filly, Dorth Vader. So there's the well-known, and there's the trying to emerge.
Up-and-comers.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Exactly. You know what? Let's start with the Santa Anita action, that San Felipe, because it sure feels like the top finishers last week out of there. Between a Practical Move had established himself, but then Mandela and Sheriffs, I mean, guys that are patient and, you know, that really are kind of deliberate in their handling with young horses, they both have got the kind of colts that people need to keep an eye on, because I thought that was even maybe as big a story as Practical Move coming back as good as he did.
Yeah, I mean, Practical Move, just started off from where he took off last year when he really came to prominence in the LaSalle Futurity, right?
Yep.
And he had a really good race here in the San Felipe. I guess it's not a surprise, but the Baffert horse, the Baffert transfers to Yachtin, didn't do as well as Yachtin's own Practical Move, and I guess just to touch on Practical Move, he's son of Practical Joke. And this is a horse I think is, you know, just a terrific value. In fact, I'd done an article recently in the TDN about him, where I compared his first crop, Gunrunners, and then I compared his second crop to Gunrunners. And whereas, you know, obviously Gunrunner had just an incredible first crop, by the time we went through the second crop, these are two-year-olds of last year, Gunrunner had dropped all the way down to 21, and, you know, Practical Move was still there in the, you know, in the top five or six, which tells you that essentially he's getting really consistent horses, especially with his two-year-olds, each year. And you normally expect a drop-off with a stallion second crop, and you really didn't get that with Practical Joke. And, you know, considering his stud fee is 25,000, yeah, that's absolutely terrific value. And you know, just that these three you know, two-year-olds from last year have carried on to three this year early, and with this colt on the Triple Crown trail, I mean, that's really a big feather in his cap.
The family, and then we talked about it in December, but for those that need a quick refresher, you know, Into Mischief, you know, out of the Distorted Humor mare, then Gilded Time mare, then Sonny's Halo, kind of an interesting female family, and what is clicking in terms of, you know, the connections to the kind of mares that he's getting, Sid?
Well, he's, you know, he was a multiple grade one winner. He won the Champagne at two. Was also, you know, obviously on the Triple Crown trail, didn't have the stamina for that, was cut back sprinting, and was, you know, again, a grade one winner, a sprinter at three. Really good looking horse, and he's a son of Into Mischief, as you just said, out of a Distorted Humor mare. He's bred just like Life Is Good on that sire line cross. Into Mischief, Distorted Humor. Life Is Good too, you know, was not a horse that, you know, stayed a mile and a quarter, but was, you know, brilliant at around a mile, really. And you could probably say the same thing for Practical Joke. That they're bred very similarly is actually a really good sign for Life Is Good as well. I mean, he was a better racehorse than Practical Joke. And they're both, you know, terrific physicals. But, you know, he's a son of Practical Joke. What he's shown as a stallion is he's getting really good two-year-olds. I just gave you the comparison vis-a-vis Gunrunner. And, you know, the great thing about this is that, as I noted, the two-year-olds are going on to become three-year-olds. And, you know, Sire really gets some pizzazz when he can get some horses on the Classics trail. And that's what he's got with Practical Move right now.
One of the fun parts of this story, of course, is that, you know, Sal Kumin, one of his groups, Head of Plains, and Chad Brown bred Practical Move, you know, utilizing Act Naughty, the Affleet Alex mare, and obviously one of, you know, one of Chad's seasons to Practical Joke. It's kind of fun. And, you know, the Affleet Alex portion of this is notable, some stamina boosting undoubtedly coming through Act Naughty, then you look down, General Meeting mare, Second Dam, Dash for Money, a Lear Fan mare, don't see a lot of Lear Fan in modern pedigrees. Dr. Blum is the sire of the Fourth Dam, Medicine Woman, so it's kind of a fresh pedigree, the Act Naughty.
Yeah, I mean, it's yet to be seen how, you know, far this horse will stay. But he certainly was impressive in the, you know, in his race, which was at a mile and a 16th. You know, came off the pace and won really well. And, you know, the two that you mentioned, well, we talked about this race beforehand. I noted last week or the week before anyway, that, you know, horses like Hijazi, even though it's by Bernardini, he did not look like a stayer, and a staying two-year-old. He wasn't handled that way by Baffert. You know, Baffert didn't break his maiden at a mile. He kept him at the sprints. And, you know, this was just, I guess, a play for the Zidane stable to see if they could get something going on the trail, because this horse Hijazi was a, you know, $3.55 million 2-year-old. They've got Arabian Knight, who, you know, was like a $2.3 million horse, and Arabian Lion, a $600,000 horse. So, you know, they've got a lot of horses, and right now, obviously, Hijazi's not going to be on the Classics trail. Arabian Knight has been announced as being off, and I guess they have a shot with Arabian Lion, though Arabian Lion was the horse that was supposed to win that La Salle Futurity that Practical Move won. And so those two horses have gone in opposite directions. I did see that Arabian Lion had a, you know, 58.4 workout the other day. But, you know, time's running out for him, too. So, ultimately, this horse, Practical Move, you know, beat a really good field out there. As you mentioned, Mandela, who trains Go Rock and Ride, and John Sheriffs, who trains Skinner, are not known for, you know, throwing horses in the deep end, young horses. Skinner, by Curlin, Sheriffs ran in two grade one races last year as a maiden. Then he dropped him in for the maiden special win. He won that nicely, but they had to wheel him back here, I guess, in like 20 days, figured to, you know, kind of bounce off, and, you know, closed from the back. But I guess, you know, if you have a horse with some potential now, you're forced to throw him in to get some points. And I think Skinner looks like a horse I like for the Santa Anita Derby. I think more time between this race and the Santa Anita Derby, you know, not 20 days, but 30 days, probably is going to be best for him. He's by Curlin. And Mandela's horse, Go Rocket Ride, you know, he's a yet in the third Candy Ride colt, Steve, that's, you know, on the Triple Crown trail. You have the West Hit Show, graded winner already. You've got Confidence Game. That's his name, wasn't it? Confidence Game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. You know, who won for DeSormo, both by Candy Ride. And now you got Go Rocket Ride, also Candy Ride. So it's a really good show for Candy Ride as well.
Let me start with Skinner, and this is a Stone Street product, Malibu Moon Mare, Winding Way, and then a More Than Ready Mare, More Than Pretty, Forest Wildcat Mare, Pretty Livia, and Crafty Prospector, Baby Jinx, the fourth dam. And so it's interesting. You've got a mix of some, frankly, some sprint speed further back, and then a little bit of route and turfy influences more recently, and then you got the ultimate classic sire, as John Sicura famously says, Curlin will get you a classic horse. And this one, he was the only runner in this race that closed on San Felipe, on the San Felipe group. Practical Move was sort of right behind the pace setters, but Skinner, rallied from last and made it, was able to get within about four lengths, ultimately three, four lengths of the top two finishers. And having talked to sheriffs that week leading into this race, he got, I think, specifically what he was looking for in terms of, the next level education. And then Go Rocket Ride, I'll say one thing, Sid, the public, in terms of the way this race was bet, Go Rocket Ride opened as a big favorite and then floated up a little bit. And in fact, I'm just noting now, Go Rocket Ride went off at 270-1, and I didn't realize until looking back at this again, Skinner was second choice within a dime, 280-1. The 1040 that Practical Move paid was, in retrospect now, a crazy value price. He went off as the fourth choice. Hijazi was third choice at 7-2. Kind of unusual, given that the case could be clearly made that Practical Move was the most accomplished horse in the field. But anyway,
that is really funny, because he had three maiden winners go off ahead of him.
Yeah, which was a little nuts. But anyway, the public jumped all over Go Rocket Ride, and they weren't entirely wrong. He ran very well here for a second-time starter, making a stake debut against some more experienced horses. So much like the dialogue that came out of the Rebel, it feels like the top three here. Hijazi will find his way. He's got some talent, and the Yakteen / Baffert over the course of the year will figure out, what to do with him. But these top three finishers are all serious going forward.
Yeah, well, Hijazi's going to go back to Bob Baffert. Tim Yakteen's not going to continue to train him. And he's going to, I think Baffert will be probably, he probably realizes the horse has got to be kept sprinting. The Candy Ride colt, he's an interesting story, because he was bred by Larry Best.
Larry Best.
And if you recall, a few years ago, when Carrie Frommer was selling those expensive Uncle Mo two-year-olds, well, his dam, Beyond Grace, was one of those. Best bought her for $1.5 million, sent her to Chad Brown, and, three starts, couldn't do anything. It's funny. You get a Uncle Mo that's training lights out, all the speed, a two-year-old sale, Best gets it, and it can't, it can't even place for Chad Brown in three starts. So because he paid this much for this, and Beyond Grace, by the way, had been bred by the Brogdons, I think sold as a weanling for maybe $50,000, and somebody pinhooked it as a yearling, and then Carrie Frommer pinhooked it as a two-year-old for all that money, but could not run. But Best kept her, invested all that money in her, and bred her to Candy Ride, sold the yearling at Fasig Tipton, Kentucky, July for, I think, $350,000. And, this colt looks like it's a pretty good colt. Like you said, all these guys writing about you know, TDN Blood Horse, they have these top 10 or 12 Derby lists, and they seem to put this colt in there. Go Rocket Ride. I mean, two starts, and they've got him in there.
Yeah, they're got to figure, you know, in the hands of Mandela, he wouldn't have run him here if he wasn't. You know, if he wasn't confident. This is the new, and we should mention, you know, the new ownership of Pin Oak is, you know, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to not reference Mrs. Abercrombie when these new Pin Oak runners keep emerging.
Yeah.
I also thought out of this race, I included Fort Bragg, Sid, who I think has got talent. This is another horse that may, you know, it may be a little bit down the road. Worcester, you know, another one that's part of this class. That this Fort Bragg, there's something there to work with. I wouldn't be dismissive of him. Might not be in the spring, but he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's won one out of five starts, and, you know, he was one of these Avengers purchases. You know, that's at SF Starlight Matica Group, $700,000. He'd run third behind Practical Move in the Los Al Futurity, and, he ran fifth here. That group, that group's horses, you can't expect it every year, but they don't appear to have one of the leading horses, except for the one that was sent to the Good Magic that was, what's his name? The Baffert Good Magic that started twice on turf of maiden, then he was sent to Oak Lawn, where he had a good run.
Reincarnate.
That colt appears to be the best chance for this group, you know, at this point.
No doubt. There's no doubt. He's a serious player. The one face that popped up, Sid, we got about 5 minutes or so. The fresh face over the last 2 weeks was the Ben Colbert upsetter at Aqueduct, and this a violence out of the LDK mare, Lemon Bell, Raise Kane, and you know, after that weird lull. You know, Violence had the initial splash, then the sort of that lull where there was some uncertainty about what direction he was going to go as a sire. He is just now, blossoming with all kinds of runners.
Yeah, I mean, basically he went through the same type of lull, as you called it, that most sires go through. Gunrunner is going through it right now. Which is as the each book through books, you know, book or year four, usually, the quality gets lower and the output is less until you get a chance to come back in year five with the better mares. And, Violence is kind of now benefiting from that, from his early success. You know, Violence is a stallion that surprisingly was coming up with high quality sprinters, no parole, volatile, Dr. Scheibel or Schivel, I don't know. All three were grade one winners for him. All three were sprinters, out and out sprinters. And so it's kind of nice to see that, you know, he like Candy Ride, he's had three really good colts this year. Don't forget that colt Drew's Gold that won the Jimmy Wingfield. He's undefeated in three starts. Appears like he's on the shelf. But he was, you know, he won the sprint, but now you obviously you have 4K and a Raise Kane. You know, a Raise Kane won that race pretty damn impressively. A funny story about him is that he'd been $180,000 Keeneland September yearling for Andrew Warren, a newish player. And they then tried to pinhook him at OBS June. And they got a $65,000 RNA on him. So they kept him. And, you know, sent him to Ben Colebrook. It took him, you know, a while to get into graded form. He'd run in a couple of black type, three or four black type races, then, you know, placed in a couple. It came to this Gotham and just won huge. And it's pretty good form because, you know, the horse that ran third, General Banker, that horse was 30-1 in this race. He'd run third a long ways behind Hit Show in the Withers. I think he was beaten like 11 and a half lengths by Hit Show. And he ran third again here at 30-1, beaten nine lengths. You know, Raise Kane obviously won by 7.5 lengths. And, you know, it's a, he, like Forte, are horses for the sire violence that's kind of separate, the distinct breaking the mold from those early sprinters. And in both these cases, you'll see that there's a lot of stamina in the broodmare sire. In this case, Lemon Drop Kid. In Forte's case, it's Blaine. And, you know, these horses come from off the pace. They win. They've been winning at the distance, you know, a mile here and a mile and a 16th. But, again, it remains to be seen how far they'll go. Violence has like six grade one winners, I think four in this country and two in Argentina. One of them in Argentina has won at 10 furlongs on dirt. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what stops these horses, whether it's going to be distance or not. But in the case of Raise Kane, I did look at his pedigree. Let's see here if I have it up here just to refresh my memory. Yeah, I have it here. He's the first stakes winner for his dam from eight foals, but the second dam is Queenie Bell, you know, a grade two winner who produced Unrivaled Bell, who won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic. And of course, Unrivaled Bell, her daughter was, you know, the champion Philly sprinter, Unique Bella. So, you know, it's a pretty damn good it's a damn good pedigree, some depth behind it, and I understand this colt might probably run next in the Bluegrass, so you know, that race is looking pretty good too, because Tappet Trice, who won the Tampa Bay Derby over the weekend, is from my understanding, he's headed there as well.
Well, it looks like I'm actually going to end up covering the Bluegrass from Keeneland that week.
Oh, nice.
It's been a while since we've done that. Just looking too at at that family. There was a full brother, Nasty Habit, who has not made the races, who's a 4-year-old, and coming up behind Raise Kane is a Frosted colt, and then she was not covered in 22, but she's got a Constitution colt on the ground already. So Lemon Bell, the daughter of Queenie Bell. Excellent. Now, Sid, this was terrific. We caught up, and we refreshed, and we will go on with it. We'll catch up with you next week. I'll be at OBS. Are you? What days are you coming?
Actually, I'm not going to be there because I'm going to be. In fact, I'm leaving for New York tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm going to be in New York for a while, and so we'll catch up down the road.
All right, I'll talk to you from OBS, though, then next Wednesday.
All right, you got it, bro.
Thanks, Sid. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillendale and Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. 510-490-1111. We're a month in to the breeding season, and you might have had a foal already. You've had a good 10 weeks of foaling, so you might have a baby or two. And we invite you to get a hold of Sid and Roger at Work Thoroughbred Consultants. I'm just catching here as well. Pat McKenna is delayed for a couple of minutes. All right, so we've got a little. There's no reason to. All right. What does that do to the old schedule? Let me. Tim Lawson is going to join us from Woodbine as well, and got a short segment with Andy. Everybody's got. It's funny. We're going to have a series of, you know, like 10-minute visits, which is fine. We like that. I'm trying to get Papa in too, and to go over the latest. You know, made some references during the NHC. I still want to get a few conversations. Obviously, we'll talk to Nick Tamaro on Friday. We'll get Nick's because I didn't have a post semifinal visit with Nick. We talked to him at the end of Saturday, and I think Case is the they're all up now, right? All Sunday's segments are up as well at the website and on the pods. If you want to pull them down, and I know that a lot of NHC contestants will listen, go back and listen to the coverage. Something very funny happened actually yesterday that made Tina and I laugh. I had to go run into Saratoga despite the weather yesterday afternoon, and had to bring in dry cleaning so I can reboot and repack for Sunday to leave. And as we were walking, we went into Price Chopper there at in Wilton, the Market 32, and as we're walking in, somebody yelled, and I should have gotten his name. I was far enough that I really couldn't see if it was somebody that I would have I should have recognized, which happens sometimes. But they yelled, "Thanks for the NHC coverage," and it really kind of tickled me too, because you don't really think of this as doing something that, I mean, that you expect somebody to say something to you at the racetrack. That's one thing, or even at the last few days in Vegas. You know, walking around, you run into people everywhere. I mean, if you obviously the horseshoe is connected to Paris, so sometimes you walk into Paris, or if you walk out to Las Vegas Boulevard to walk around, and you just you're going to see. There's 600 competitors, and then there's a lot of cases there's friends with them and horse player pals that are with them. So you run into people in Vegas. That's different. This made me laugh but it's Saratoga, right? That's one of the appeals of living in a town like Saratoga, like Lexington, Louisville, Hot Springs. That's part of the charm is that, there's people all around that are interested in the game, and so made me laugh. Thanks for the coverage. My pleasure. So if there's anything you want to hear, there's a lot of, you got a 4 hours in Sunday. So there's 20 hours of conversation. And there's, we venture off in some cases to industry topics. You know, I had the visit from Tom Rooney interspersed in there, and the fun visit with Ben Bajic. It's so funny what provokes listeners and what they, you know, what might interest them. And it's one of the reasons I'm not shy about, you know, venturing off the the beaten path and going off into, you know, food. But I would guess that, well, we're 70 to 75%, right, is horse related, and a good 15% is food related. I'm convinced. Maybe I'll take the under, but let's say at least 10% is food, and the rest is, you know, other sports and movies and entertainment and, you know, life in general. So the Ben Bajic visit was appreciated. I got a nice note from a listener that said that he agreed. Somebody from New Orleans completely agreed. And on Sunday, going back to the ballroom to set up for the semifinal, and when Ben got there, I showed him the email from the listener, but then I also had to talk to him because Tina was listening to the coverage on Saturday. And she, after I was done, she immediately wanted to know. She called me and said, "Can we go to New Orleans? Can we stay at that apartment again?" And so I had to ask Ben, because Tina, it just so happens that Tina's vacation, that April vacation, which is usually never works. Usually it's it's either the week I leave for Kentucky, or it's the last week of the big preps of Santa Anita Derby, Bluegrass, and Wood Memorial. But for some reason, the way the calendar falls, her vacation comes after Easter. So it looks like I'm going back to New Orleans for a third visit this spring, because she wants to do. I don't. Well, how can I? You understand my situation, right? How am I supposed to say no to anything? She has seen me for a total. It'll be 5 days here, and it was 4 days in February. So she will have seen me for 9 days, because I'm leaving again for 3 weeks. So she will have seen me 9 days since the second week in January. So if your spouse, male or female, if your spouse is that, you know, that nice about about providing me that leeway, well, then you're lucky, because I know I am. So when she said, "Can we go to New Orleans my vacation week?" What am I going to say? Of course. Yes, dear. Right? All right. I think we're ready. I think Pat might be ready for us. There we go. He just said, "I'm ready now." I should have maybe that was even more. Maybe I didn't need to tell you how wonderful my wife is. Perhaps we'll find out. We'll find out momentarily. But Pat McKenna is going to join us in the wake of a very successful rally Monday at the state capitol. Big, nice crowd of industry stakeholders and all kinds of people that support the game were on hand. And Pat, good morning.
Morning, Steve. Yeah, I mean, let me just start by thanking everyone who took time out of their week, out of their day, on a Monday, on a rainy Monday, to get on buses from Belmont, from Saratoga, to drive themselves, to fill cars with colleagues, friends, family members. It was a phenomenal turnout. We haven't done this in more than 10 years as a way to demonstrate the strength of the sport, the diversity of jobs, you know, and everyone was represented on Monday. Breeding farms, NYRA employees, organized labor in the form of carpenters, electricians, and plumbers. The energy was sky high. Again, on a late on a Monday morning, on a rainy day in the state capitol, you know, we had, I think, 8 elected officials, members of the New York State Senate, New York State Assembly. I'd like to particularly thank Senator Joe Addabbo for really being a champion for this project. Assemblymember Carrie Warner, who your listeners are probably familiar with since she represents Saratoga and is remarkably effective as a lawmaker protecting and preserving the breeding industry, horse racing, the thousands of jobs in her district that are directly tied to agriculture in one form or fashion. Assemblymember Mikhail Szilagyi, who represents Elmont, and again has been an incredibly effective advocate for her colleagues. Because remember, that's a big part of what legislators are doing in terms of advocating for projects. They're turning to their own colleagues to communicate the benefits of a new Belmont Park for Long Island, in the case of Carrie Warner, for Saratoga, because as we heard throughout the rally, what is good for Belmont Park is good for Saratoga, and what's good for horse racing is good for New York State. That means jobs and economic opportunities in every corner. And again, that's what we heard throughout the day on Monday. Representatives from organized labor communicating to lawmakers about the incredibly important, good-paying middle-class jobs that will be attached to a $455 million construction project. So I think everyone left that event feeling certainly momentum, feeling really good about the sport. You know, and it showed everyone there, reporters, legislators, onlookers, that this is a community, that it's much more than just a sport. It's so much more than just what we see, obviously, on the track. And that's what came through in living color on Monday at the Million Dollar Staircase in Albany. And just yesterday, we received the fantastic news that both the New York State Assembly and New York State Senate has accepted and supported this loan that was proposed by Governor Hochul at the end of January. So that was the next step in the legislative process. Each house has the opportunity to either accept, reject, or modify any and all of the governor's proposals. So both houses accepted the loan arrangement, the financing package, with minor modifications that we will certainly pay close attention to and remain you know, focused on this for however long it takes. We're obviously hoping for the budget to be closed and signed into law by April 1st, but we will continue doing absolutely everything in our power to communicate the benefits of this project, to refute the misinformation that continues to attack New York jobs and New York families. And that's what this project is all about. I heard Dave O'Rourke just the other day, he was asked about answering the questions, the pressure that that creates. And he said, listen, the facts are on our side. There is no, we don't feel any pressure because we know what this project is about. But what's important is the thousands of families who we are advocating for a new Belmont Park on behalf of. And that's exactly right. This project has never been about NYRA or NYRA's interests. This is about horse race. This is about thoroughbred racing in New York State. And most importantly, as a nonprofit, as a steward of these state assets, Saratoga Racecourse, Belmont Park, Aqueduct Racetrack, our job is to sustain and grow the sport, create jobs for New York families. And that's, again, that's what this project is about. So Monday was a phenomenal opportunity to explain that, to hear from individuals who are working in these jobs. We had Karen Chavez from the chaplaincy tell her remarkable story about getting to Belmont Park as a young person, because the barn where her sister was working came together to pay for her airfare. We heard from from Carlos Martin, a third generation trainer who chooses to run his small business in New York because of the strength of the entire racing ecosystem. We had Dr. Scott Alschwied from Reardon Riddle, who is not only a world-class veterinarian surgeon, but also a farm owner and a breeder who has grown a business in Saratoga because of the strength of horse racing in New York. So it was, you know, I think the timing was fantastic. It felt like a really strong closing argument. Unfortunately, the Assembly and the Senate heard us loud and clear.
And on that topic, too, Pat, explain, I scoffed earlier this morning at the headline on Tom Precious's report in Blood Horse, where it says caveats for Belmont Park reconstruction project, as if the little nuanced elements of the two different approvals or endorsements, they're more, you know, they're just some technical elements. They're not caveats that would preclude the loan from going forward.
And I'm not sure if Tom is extremely well versed in all things capital, and he certainly drilled down on some of the details.
Yeah.
But I think for your listeners, this was a huge accomplishment, and I do not think it's hyperbole to say that this could be one of, if not the most significant, racetrack construction projects in the sports history here in the United States. You know, I'll just add some context to that. This isn't 1972. The world has changed in some ways dramatically. Considering the opposition, considering the misinformation, our ability collectively, with the help of everyone in the game, everyone who cares about the sport, has allowed us to make really effective arguments based on the facts. So that's the most important thing out of yesterday, is that this is advancing. This is continuing to advance towards April 1st. But yes, on the Senate side, some common sense additions to the governor's original proposal, requiring minority and women-owned businesses to be a part of the construction, among other things. But we certainly do not view any of the relatively minor modifications as stumbling blocks. And ultimately, the Senate, the Assembly, and the executive branch will come together and negotiate a final budget. But, you know, it's also helpful to remember that many of the governor's proposals were rejected in both houses. So we stand on really strong, firm footing here, and we're as close as we ever have to being able to reimagine Belmont for the benefit of New York State, for the benefit of horse racing for generations to come.
Pat McKenna joining us from NYRA in the wake of Monday's rally, which just is heartening that there was so much widespread support expressed. And then the follow-up virtually immediately, 24 hours later, as the General Assembly and Senate essentially say that they support the $455 million loan to assist NYRA execution of a new Belmont. Pat
and Steve, let me, if you don't mind,
sure.
I'd be remiss if I didn't specifically thank the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen, Joe Applebaum, Will Olympievich, Naja Thompson from the breeders. They organized, they organized downstate and upstate. Naja served as our MC on Monday, did a phenomenal job. That sounds simple. It's certainly not simple when you're talking about 8 to 10 legislators coming in at different times, a huge crowd. He did a great job, and it truly was a team effort. So thanks to NYTHA, the breeders, and again, everyone who came and joined us in person. It is not lost. It was hugely significant and important. So thank you.
Nice. Pat, what in terms of the timing, one thing that some people, it's funny, this sort of came up a little bit while I was away at both at HBPA, somebody talked about it, and then even at Vegas at NHC. How soon do we expect there'll be you know, some working plans, I mean, if in this process, in terms of, you know, rendering and, you know, some of the decision process, on the surfaces and configuration things?
Certainly sooner than later on the surfaces. We've never shied away from our interest in adding a synthetic surface as a fourth surface. I still see commentary about Naira adding a synthetic or replacing the main track. That's never been what we have proposed or what we're interested in doing. It's completely renovating the main track, two turf courses, adding a synthetic as a fourth surface on the interior of all those. Those decisions, sooner than later, in terms of the building, we need to be pretty deliberate considering we do not have the financing in place. I think we certainly never wanted to spend significant sums of money, which is what you're describing takes.
Right.
Renderings, hiring architectural firms, before we knew that we were secure in our ability to move forward. So that's been the path here. I completely understand that there is curiosity about what a new building might look like. 275,000 square feet, roughly, versus 1.3 million square feet, which is what it is now. A ton of open space, putting the park back in Belmont Park. And, you know, we're fortunate at Naira because we get to experience Saratoga every single summer, which works as well as any sporting venue in the world. And what we've seen, especially in recent years, is that fans love to be able to walk around, to experience different kinds of hospitality offerings, everything from the backyard, which is absolutely central to the Saratoga experience, and we hope to replicate that at Belmont Park, to, you know, a box seat, the newer hospitality areas, the 1863 Club, the Paddock Suite, the spa verandas. All of these things have contributed to the energy and enthusiasm around that facility day in, day out. And I say we're fortunate because hopefully we get to apply those lessons to the construction and the complete reimagining of Belmont Park.
Is there a racetrack design firm that I'm most notably thinking Paul Roberts, who did some consulting years ago in advance of some of the Saratoga projects?
There are some firms that, you know, I'm familiar with Paul's work and is, you know, certainly knows as much about the history of racetrack design and construction, probably anybody in the world.
Yep.
And there are also firms that are expert in stadium design, recent racetrack and construction projects, whether it's in Europe or here stateside. So there's certainly plenty of expertise out there, and we'll take our time to make sure that in the event that we're lucky enough to get this signed into law, that we have someone that understands the history and traditions of Belmont while also understanding that there is a desire among fans and they deserve a facility that they can be proud of. New York deserves a Belmont Park that we can be proud of.
Well, we'll certainly look forward to all the elements coming together, but a lot. There was a lot accomplished here in the last 48 hours, essentially. You mentioned some things about Saratoga, too, Pat. I just very casually mentioned the release of the summer meet stake schedule, a few changes, and one really sweet element, the naming of the renaming of the Lucky Coin to honor Harvey Pack, and that was received widespread huzzas.
Yeah, that should be a fun day. I think we're all looking forward to being able to honor the legacy, the contributions of Harvey, so instrumental with everything that we still do on television, with the handicapping, the analysis that I hope Naira sets the standard for across the country. And Harvey was before my time, but he certainly, it doesn't take long at Naira to hear Harvey Pack stories and to understand his contributions to the New York Racing Association.
Well, if you want to experience Harvey, all you can do is watch Andy. you knew I was going there.
a few kind of subtle changes. I think that and this has been true. It's certainly true. The upcoming Belmont Spring Summer Meet that'll get going in May. To move some of those stakes to make these weekends a little bit more well-rounded. We did it last year at Saratoga by moving some things off of Saturdays onto Sundays and Fridays. It's an embarrassment of riches when it comes to the stakes program at Saratoga. And I think Friday, I've always thought that Friday afternoon, and this is personally speaking, late on a Friday, lots of locals who may have finished up work a little bit early, tons of knowledge about the sport. So to see some really high caliber racing on Friday, I think is fantastic for the spa.
Well, for those that haven't looked at the schedule, go to Naira, go to the website, naira.com, and it's all laid out there. You can plan your visit if you base it on stake weekends or even weekdays. But kickoff Thursday, July 13th through to Labor Day, Monday, September 4th. Pat, I appreciate it. I wanted to give everybody the follow-up. We talked to Mig live as he was arriving on Monday, and then I saw the good news.
Oh, nice.
Yesterday.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It was great.
He spoke too, right? Yeah, he spoke.
He did?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Eloquently.
Well, that's our Mig.
That's right. 100%. Well, thank you, Steve. And again, thank you on behalf of Naira Racing in New York to everyone who took a half day or even a full day to show up in Albany and send this incredibly strong demonstration of support.
Pat McKenna, everybody. PC McKenna on your Twitter machine. Pat, talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
There it is. Pat McKenna with your update. And I appreciate that. I wanted to slip that in because that was very fast news that both houses more or less just signing on. And there were actually a couple of great quotes. Who was it? There was one. I don't know if it was an assemblyman or it might have been Joe Addabbo, who is so supportive. And, it should be said that the governor, Governor Hochul, she's been terrific. She's all in on racing and enjoys it and has turned out, turned up at the track whenever she's had a chance. But where was it? I gotta find that quote. I don't know if it was in Matt's piece or some one of the state senators said it more or less was just dismissive and appropriately dismissive of those saying we shouldn't be giving this loan and we should end racing in New York. And he said, that's not happening. And there's 19,000 jobs involved. No. When your animal activist terrorism creates 19,000 jobs and I think the number is the number $30,000 per horse? In trickle down in revenue generation, I think it's 30,000 each horse. You contribute to society to that extent. You let us know. Back after this, in fact, Andy Serling, Tim Lawson from Woodbine, and Seth and Popo got plenty to do. Third hour at the races. Back after this.
At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place.